Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi everyone, it's obvious. I'm John Verhoeven, and I was a cop back in the 80s in Sydney.
And I'm Paul Verhoeven, John's son. I'm an author, and I wrote two books about Dad's time as a cop.
The first five seasons of Loose Units spanned my time in general duties, forensics, my time as a firefighter, and even my stint running a funeral home.
This season, we're visiting the locations of Australia's most notorious, baffling, horrific crimes, and looking at what happened there.
From Snowtown to the family, from the Morehouse murders to haunted highways, this season of Loose Units is your go-to guide to the worst crimes in Australian true crime history.
Welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Today, Dad and I are doing something a little bit different, partly because we got some really interesting correspondence from a listener, but partly because I've just come off the back of my first weekend hosting overnights on the ABC. And by the way, Dad, I did get quite a few texts from listeners of Loose Units who also were listening to the show and were extremely lovely, so thank you so much for all of you for listening. But the point is, I literally just got off doing it's a 2 to 6 a.m. shift, Dad. And it was such an interesting experience doing, first of all, live national radio, but partly the conundrum I had going in was trying to process who would possibly be up from 2 to 6 a.m. listening to radio. And it was fascinating interacting with those people. It was just wonderful.
Well, if you leave any capital city in any country in the world and you're out driving, you're not driving, you're obviously a passenger, as everyone knows, with your little plastic steering wheel.
Oh yeah, but Dad, look, the good thing about the plastic steering wheel is one, it's washable, and two, it clips to any dashboard in most sedans or hatchbacks. Yeah,
but one of the things, I've done a lot of shift work, both in the fire brigade and the police force.
Yeah.
And one of the loneliest jobs, and the people that I'm talking about may well disagree, because there are positives about this job in that they're by themselves, but they're their own boss. And I'm talking about interstate truck drivers.
It's amazing how much of our trade relies on trucks. I mean, this is going to sound odd, but most of the cargo in countries like this, America, Australia, big countries with lots of, like, a big landmass, most things get transported via truck.
Correct.
And it is a, well, what adjective would you describe?
Massive.
It's
a massive business. And Paul, something you may, in fact, I'm quite sure you don't know this, it's just an aside before we get started into this. You know, we're sort of starting off in a fairly lighthearted way because things are going to get fairly full on soon.
Yeah.
But your brother, dearest Mark, he has got a 40-foot container landing in Sydney.
What?
From Malaysia.
Yeah.
Full of surgical gloves. It's arriving in the next week. And it's going to be transported from the docks to a warehouse in way, way out of Sydney by truck. And that truck driver, that's sort of a common denominator, because a long-time listener who lives in Queensland, and just to let everyone know, we have the blessing of the family to discuss and, this case.
Yeah, I'd like to read the message that she sent you, if I may, just to give everybody a bit of context. Hi, John. I'm just reaching out to see if you and Paul would consider doing an episode of Loose Units about a family member of mine that went missing. Would be interesting to get your thoughts and opinions on how the case was handled and what you think might have happened to them. Long-time listener here. Love the podcast and the books. Thank you. Now, I would like to add a few caveats before we dive into this episode. First of all, we are not, and I know you all know this, but I just want to cover our bases out of respect. We are not investigators. Not only that, we are not investigating, so we are not trying to pick up this case where we're not doing any detective work here. We are taking, as this listener requested, we're just taking a look at this case. We didn't know about this, obviously, before this wonderful listener sent through the message and had a conversation with Dad yesterday. We basically just think this is a really interesting case with some interesting loose ends, and we wanted to take a bit of a look. So we're not claiming to have any expertise in that area, and we aren't trying to solve anything. We're just exploring a story on behalf of this listener. And I just wanted to put that out there, Dad, because I didn't want anyone to think that we were trying to put on our detective hats and do a better job than the police or, or kind of dig up old things. And this is going to be handled with extreme respect and curiosity. It's just she wanted us to look at the story, and we're looking at the story. That's all. Yeah.
Yes, and you know, when truck drivers, male and female, are traversing our great roads.
Big country.
Across this big, big country. So the person, the man, the son, the uncle, the friend that we're going to discuss, his full name was James Douglas White. And that's White with a W, which is
W-H-Y-T-E.
Correct. So, the lovely our listener, this was her uncle, and she was very young. She has, you know, distant but fond memories, and he lived in Queensland, in Brisbane.
He was 31 years old when he went missing. He was, as you said before, he was a truck driver. He was one of those interstate truck drivers, and he vanished.
Mm.
Around about November 16th, 2003. And he was, in fact, he was working at the time. He was actually, he was transporting onions.
And, well, he was doing onions to Adelaide, which sounds like sort of the title of a book.
Or a band name, yeah.
When he gets to Adelaide, now, the truck that he was driving was owned by a freight company in Queensland called Voits.
So I know sometimes truck drivers will own their own trucks, or they're owned by small companies. So Voits is a big company, I assume.
It is. And these trucks, I did a bit of sort of research as to the cost of these absolutely extraordinarily massive. And most of the big trucks, or a lot of them, if you sort of go into the hardcore, a little bit sort of like, I guess, the equivalent of motorcycles, you know, one thinks of Harley-Davidsons, for example, and of course, a lot of these trucks are American. The Mack truck, with the famous bulldog on the hood. Now, this truck's 6 months old, but it's an unusual color. It's purple.
Oh,
which is interesting.
Sometimes you see these trucks, and they are incredibly ornate. They've got really delicate decals on them. It's sort of
the artwork.
It almost feels like an old school aesthetic. Some of them do have a real design element. And
yeah, and they name them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they have, you know, a little bit like the planes in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. They had, you know, cartoon characters, for example, on the sides.
Yeah, yeah.
And they name planes, you know, Qantas and all the big airlines, well, particularly Qantas, they actually name their planes. So it's a long trip. Let's just sort of say to our listeners, particularly those that are overseas, that it's approximately 24-hour trip.
Jesus Christ.
That's non-stop.
24 hours on the road is nothing to sneeze at.
No, it's not, which brings in a whole sort of list of sort of things that truck drivers are known to do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that truck drivers are known, and perhaps more so back then, they would take speed. Speed simply being a stimulant.
Yeah.
You know, you've got coffee, you've got, you know, dark chocolate, all those sorts of things. Weirdly, if I take dark chocolate at nighttime, I just cannot sleep.
Yeah.
I sort of lie in this semi-catatonic state. So he does the Brisbane to Adelaide route. Now, he is used to, James is used to traversing this part of the country down the east coast, which generally comes through Sydney, sort of skirts around Sydney.
Yeah.
And because, if you know, your objective is to get to the point as quickly and safely as possible. Now, when he's in Adelaide, he gets a call because he's got a mobile phone. And what it's sort of the impression that I get in this particular case is that he's then waiting, but he doesn't quite know, because he's working for a freight company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, behind the scenes, they're sort of vying for jobs. And eventually he gets a call, and it's to deliver oats, but not from Adelaide to Brisbane. It's from Border Town, which is about 100 kilometres east of Adelaide. Now, this is important, listeners, because what I did yesterday over the weekend is that I programmed into my map app on my phone all the different routes with all the different times. And it's around about, if we want to be more specific than 24 hours, we can say it's around about 21, 21 and a half hours. But that was from Adelaide. But because, so I did all that sort of, I put in that as the starting point.
Yeah.
And it gave around about three different routes. But then when you move to the right and we go to Border Town, it's a completely different scenario. That is a very, very interesting point from my perspective.
Yeah.
Because, Paul, if you and I were going to do a road trip from Adelaide and we punch in Brisbane, it gives us coordinates. If we move to the right, east to Border Town, punch in the same destination, Brisbane, it gives us a different route. Now, one of the bosses up in Brisbane had said to James that, and this is a point of conjecture because I have gone, I have, the family gave us the coroner's inquest findings. That's the first inquest.
Yeah.
And it was a lengthy document that I've read twice because there's so much to unpack.
Mm.
Basically, the boss in Queensland said to James that he wanted him to go via Broken Hill. That is unusual. Now, during the inquest, which was held in Parramatta in Sydney, listeners, it's important to, at this point, know that we haven't discussed what's happened to James. And during the first inquest, they have not found James, even though it's years later.
Yeah.
This is important. So the boss says go via Broken Hill, but one of the witnesses in the inquest, a professional seasoned truck driver, said that was an incredibly torturous and tough.
Yeah.
And grueling. These are his words. Route. And he couldn't quite understand why anyone would want you to do that. It's just, it's up to 250 kilometres between towns.
Right.
These are massive distances. You could not travel in Europe for 250Ks without seeing another town.
Hmm.
It's just not possible. It's a nighttime trip. So that just, I just want you and the listeners to sort of think about that route, which is, he'd never done that before. He was an East Coast man,
right?
Okay, which he knew. Also, people are saying, well, why didn't he go back the way he came? Which is a very good point. But another thing is that with truck drivers, when they go to a destination to get their load, you've got lots and lots of trucks. And he was really upset that night. And he conveyed his feelings to his then fiancée. They were discussing things on you know, having numerous mobile conversations, and he was saying how upset he was that he was the last truck to be loaded.
Right.
And that sort of makes you anxious. He wants to hit the road running. Once he's loaded up with cereal, grain,
yeah,
he's en route. And he...
Hang on, wasn't it onions?
No. No, it was oats. It was onions. Onions going from Brisbane.
Yep.
To Adelaide. And then oats from border town to Brisbane. It's a right. Massive. Yep.
Okay. The misunderstanding came from the fact that in the Sydney Morning Herald article that I read, it said the 31-year-old interstate truck driver vanished sometime on or near November 16, 2003, on his way home to Queensland after delivering a load of onions to South Australia.
Yeah.
Okay, so he had delivered them. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because, you know, in a perfect world, they don't want the truck to go back empty.
Mm. I mean, oh, it makes sense to, yeah, it makes sense to maximise the...
Yeah, and they're sort of, they're hanging around, they're waiting. You know, he gets the call. He actually spoke to the... Oats, the company that was going to load his truck.
Yeah.
Because they also like to build up a relationship and suss the driver out. And they found him, and I quote, as per the coronial inquiry, that he was incredibly polite. You know, he's 31, he's engaged, he wants to get back to Brisbane. You know, he just wants to get home and you know, he's looking at a long trip and in his mind it was said, he said to various people that he wanted to, because he was a bit pissed off, that he wanted to try and do it in one hit.
Okay.
And to drive for 24 hours is, I guess today, speaking in 2024, I have a feeling that it's just not on. And there are cameras.
Oh, you mean in terms of it not being allowed?
No, not allowed, because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you're on the road, you're in a vehicle that has the potential to cause major damage if it's involved with a car accident.
Yeah.
And also, you know, they don't want you falling asleep. So they've got these special cameras and they monitor the plate and they can calculate quite easily.
Okay.
You know, well, they can actually calculate your average speed.
Right.
And that's why you've got these truck stops. And that's why in this particular truck, he had a sleeping compartment with its own fridge and air conditioning unit.
Is that normal for trucks like this to have, like long-haul trucks to have...
A lot of them have got sleepers.
Right, okay.
The next time you look at a big cabin on a big truck...
Oh, it's that sort of overhang bit, right?
It's sort of... It's behind the driver's... compartment. It is accessed through the inside of the truck. And it's basically a very, very small sleeping capsule.
That makes sense.
Not unlike one of those Japanese
capsule hotel. So it's literally it's a box big enough just for a bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Single bed. Makes sense. Yep.
Okay. So at one point he says to his fiancée that he'd overshot a turn. Remember, he's driving at night time.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, he was engaged at the time. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
And he's talking to her occasionally. Then they had their last conversation and he said he'd taken a wrong turn. He then had to backtrack.
Uh-huh.
And he... And this is one of the things about the inquest, that they are... Because they have to look at all different possibilities.
Yeah.
It's not a trial... You know, it's a little bit more casual. They still want all the facts. They had I think 16 witnesses, which is quite a few witnesses.
That seems like a lot
to me it indicates how thorough the police were. And it's the New South Wales Police Force, because it's happening in New South Wales.
Yep.
And now back to the thing about speed. And I'm not talking about miles per hour. I'm talking about taking an upper.
Which, by the way, I did, even just a cursory Google, shows that this is a... not every truck driver does it,
no.
But it is a common...
Very, very common.
Common thing in the industry, yeah.
Correct. And that was recognised and taken on board by the magistrate.
So this was talked about in the court case?
Yes. Just remember, listeners, it's... The coroner's court is different. Their purpose is to try and ascertain what has happened to a particular person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at this point that I'd like to bring up a couple of witnesses at the distribution warehouse in Bordertown.
Yep.
Okay. And they also gave evidence. And they said, in their opinion, James's eyes were very glassy. He seemed to be moving fairly rapidly.
Could that just be exhaustion because of the length of the
trip? That's what the magistrate said.
Oh,
the coroner actually said, yes, but hang on a sec. He's been driving. He's tired. You know, I also thought about this. You know, we do get sore eyes. They don't know the guy. Their argument was that they see a lot of truck drivers and he was the most affected that they'd ever seen anyone. The coroner then says, okay, well, so you're saying that, and then you let him go. You let him drive. You thought he was safe to drive.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And they're not experts. They're not medical professionals. They're not police. They don't have access to drug test. So they're saying he was, in their opinion, affected, but, but you can still take our very valuable load and drive it for 24 hours. So that sort of shoots them in the foot. To a degree, but
yeah,
point to be noted. Now, this is when things go absolutely bizarre. The next morning, and this is per the court case, James's truck is seen by a father and son that are driving on Collymongle Station, which is near Collarenabri, which is in northwestern New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
They're driving in a Toyota Land Cruiser, and behind them is the gentleman's wife. So they're in two cars, and they're driving along a sort of a water canal in the middle of a cotton field.
Yeah,
it's basically a bit better than a dirt track. Okay, it's not sealed. And it was described as being in black soil, which, as we all know, is incredibly good soil. There is this immaculate 6-month-old purple semi-trailer.
There's the purple that you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, parked mm-hmm. by this waterway.
Yeah.
The father noted the time, which is interesting, at 8:06 in the morning. He slows down, drives a little bit past... And then he goes back and he sees a man coming from the back of the truck.
Interesting.
Walking towards the front of the truck and they engage in a conversation. Now, at no point did this gentleman with his son and the wife in the second car, at no point did he actually see the face of this man.
Okay.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare. A leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
They engaged in a conversation, and the gentleman said to this person, because we don't know who the person is, are you okay? And the person says, I'm fine. And the driver says, look, do you need a hand? You know, is everything okay? And the person, without looking at the gentleman in the car, basically says, everything's fine. But the gentleman in the car with the son, he noticed a couple of interesting things. There was a swag, which is a blanket, rolled up neatly, sort of situated at the foot of the front wheel. And these wheels are massive. The impression he got was that everything was in order. You know, so he's very observant. So once he feels the gentleman is okay, he and his son and wife in the second vehicle, they depart. That is the last they see of this particular person. Then later on that day, a worker and his girlfriend, who actually work for the cotton farm, mm-hmm. and it's a massive station, they're driving along and they see tracks, and they know that there are tracks on this path, this road, this track, that are very, they're deep tire tracks. And this gentleman can ascertain that it's from a truck, a massive truck. They're following it, and they can see by the path that as it's been driving along this track, it's been smashing into things.
Oh, you know, shit.
Breaking shrubs, trees. It's a very, very awkward road. In fact, this particular person that works on this cotton farm, mm-hmm. he's of the opinion that this vehicle must have been traveling at high speed, and he gets the impression, based on his experience, that this vehicle must have, at some point, been very, very close to tipping over.
And this is in the inquest, right?
Correct. This is all in the inquest. The detail is, well, it's microscopic detail. This gentleman with his girlfriend, it must have been an incredible experience, because they're in the middle of a cotton field, some 30,000 acres, and all of a sudden, guess what they come across?
What?
The truck. So all his theories, his hypothesis about the tracks, he'd sort of crystallized these thoughts, and all of a sudden he comes across a massive prime mover in the middle of a cotton field. Think about this. And he and his girlfriend, they drive past it. In fact, he drove for quite a few kilometres past it. But something must have been niggling in his mind. He must have been thinking, shit, this is just so bizarre. And he goes back to the truck and he takes photographs of it. He approaches the cabin. He walks around. He checks that there's just absolutely no one within sight. Mm-hmm. He climbs up into the cabin. The keys to the truck are in the ignition.
That's weird.
Yep. And
is it, by the way, I know it sounds weird to me. Is that weird?
Well, I guess, look, there's no one around. The keys are in the truck. I mean, it's a big thing to hop up into someone's truck.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a sort of a, but, you know, you're in the middle of a cotton field. It's remote. Something to note also that is of slight interest is that there was a storm coming. And it's in black soil. So just remember those two things.
Sure.
So at the bottom of the truck, there are two empty water bottles outside. There's a half-smoked cigarette, which is quite important. There's the, there's the blanket. But the blanket has got what appears to be burns in it. It also had some blood on the blanket. So
really,
now,
I didn't know about the blood. That's
no, mate. This is all in the detailed.
Okay,
you know, 1,000 pages that I read.
Yeah,
read twice, by the way. So I was taking notes, Paul, and my notes looked like a wasp has just dipped the back of its tail in ink and taken some drugs itself and run over the paper. It's just a mishmash of there's so much information in this case. And there's no one's there. And as the family also said later on, which we'll come to in relation to other things, that it was summer, it was unbelievably hot, and the ground was parched and arid. Now, I want people to just remember that in the recesses of your mind for later on. So he gets in touch with the station owner. No one knows about it. Ultimately, they find out who the owner is. They get in touch with Voits, and they get in touch with one of the managers there.
Mm-hmm.
The manager says, well, he speaks to the boss, and the boss says to the manager, look, get in touch with the police. Okay, this is important. Get in touch with the local police. Turns out that the fiance, she was very concerned because she could not raise her fiance.
Mm.
So she's already got in touch with the local police. Now, this is a little bit of a problem for the magistrate, the coroner, because between the owner of Voits telling his manager to get in touch with the police, there was a four-hour gap. And the manager could not explain to the coroner why he waited 4 hours until he contacted the police. But what he did do is he organized to have the truck moved. This is problematic. Even though the coroner acknowledges that no one could possibly know that this would possibly be a crime scene.
Yeah.
Now that's, you know, they've got this truck with, I imagine, an extremely high value payload, which, by the way, had not been interfered with at all. So it's not sort of like a theft scenario, being taken off the road and having everything on board, you know, moved to another truck, which does happen. They move the truck. And one of the reasons that the manager in Queensland gives as to the moving of the truck, I come back to the weather. Storm coming, black soil could have created a situation where it would have become bogged. So, you know, that's in I guess, in his favour as to why they had it moved. The sad thing about this, of course, is that it's potentially a crime scene. But no one knows that at this stage. But it's still very unusual in that the driver's just completely vanished.
Yeah.
The police get involved. The local police think this is most unusual. Detectives get involved. Of course, the cabin of the truck is then forensically examined. Now, one of the interesting things that I found quite fascinating is that truck drivers, they have, you know, they have radios on board, Paul, like a CB radio, and they converse a lot. You know, one of the classics is they warn other drivers of police and of, you know, inspections done by the Roads and Traffic Authority. It's but also it's a way of communicating at 2 or 3 in the morning when you're not listening to you on the radio, on ABC radio. You know, they may decide to chat with each other. They use Channel 40, but a very, very observant police officer noticed the radio was set to Channel 23. That is unusual. What that can mean, now this is where I'm just starting to throw some variables into the scenario.
You're saying what this can mean, not what this does mean.
No, what I'm just saying what it could mean.
Yeah.
And this is a known fact as well, is that if you strike up a... Because Channel 40 is a general channel, so you're not going to then go, oh, hi, Paul, you know, how's your wife? You're not going to sort of... I'm going to say to you, Paul, let's go to another channel where we can have sort of a bit more of a personal conversation, not private, but also we don't want to clog up Channel 40. But then you begin to ask yourself, was he in communication with someone else? Interesting.
Yeah.
So the police decide that even if it is a crime scene, it's been heavily tainted. A fingerprint expert is called in, and he goes into the cabin and he dusts everything. Now, listeners, I know exactly what that's like to do. You're in a cabin of a truck. It was incredibly hot. And where a driver, one driver, but bearing in mind they have lots and lots of drivers, lots of employees with that company.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that you will touch. You will touch the steering wheel. You will touch the gear shift. You know, there'll be certain switches, toggles, the buttons that control. I don't know whether it had electric windows. There are all sorts of things. You know, there are mirrors that you will wind down your window, and you may reach out and touch the mirror to adjust it. And that was a classic when I was in the police force. When I was in fingerprints, one of the greatest places in any motor vehicle to get the best fingerprints from was a mirror. Because if you go through the motions of adjusting a rear vision mirror, chances are your thumb at least will actually touch the glass.
That makes sense.
And you will leave. But according to the fingerprint expert, there were absolutely no prints. It was like an amalgam of sort of many, many prints on top of each other, which yielded zero results. The logbook, interestingly, was wrapped in a cloth, and that was also down on the road near the front wheel. It's very hot. It's nighttime. At this point in the story, my mind's sort of racing as to what person I should introduce. And what I'm now going to talk about is I'm going to bring in a female doctor who gave expert evidence as to the effects of speed on a driver. She says, and this is in her testimony in court,
mm-hmm.
that people, particularly truck drivers that take very, very small doses over a long period of time, so every couple of hours you would have some speed, but very small doses, but what can happen is that at a certain point, all the small doses sort of come together in one big hit, and they can make you panic, become incredibly stressed, anxious. And one theory that was put forward in the inquest, was that at a certain point he realized he was behind schedule, he'd taken a wrong turn. You know, he may have been thinking about fuel for some weird reason. He's just turned off and gone down this track. And we've already mentioned before that the truck was knocking into things. It was traveling at high speed, so fast, in fact, that it could have flipped over. And all of a sudden, and it's nighttime, there was no moon, there were no street lights. When we say black in the country, mate, we are talking.
Oh, it's
black,
impenetrable.
Yeah. It's just, and he's pulled up. This is a theory, and he's just absolutely. There's no phone reception. He's in this place of despair and darkness, and he's just wandered off. Okay, I am going to give an opinion at this juncture, Paul. I would like to say. That I don't believe it.
Okay.
To me, that just sounds... He's a professional truck driver. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
It just, to me, I find it problematic. Okay, so then we then start to say, well, okay, Paul, how about you posit a theory? Do you have any ideas?
The person that was spotted by the two witnesses... where it wasn't verified whether or not that was the missing person.
Hmm.
I mean, the true crime person in me says, well, that could be a person who's just done something nefarious and is heading back to the cabin, the blankets. Yeah.
Agree. And, okay, let's just sort of dig down on that.
Uh-huh.
The father
at
first was shown a lot of photographs of our dear James. And guess what?
What?
He couldn't identify him. But then
they
bring in a private investigator, and the private investigator, because this gentleman in the car with his son had actually spoken to this person, what the private investigator does is he plays back recordings of James's voice.
Oh.
And then he's shown more photographs, but this is just absolutely not admissible in court. The magistrate found this problematic because in the beginning... with the police, the gentleman in the car could not say that this was in fact James.
Okay.
It could have been someone else. He never saw his face, which I find... I mean, don't you find that a little bit bizarre?
That's a little bit odd, yeah.
You know, what's going on? Why, you know, why wouldn't you look at... It's not like there are any... There's just so few people out there.
It seems more likely to me that you might talk to somebody and not remember their face, but it's... I mean...
He said, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the fact that the face wasn't visible to me says that the person, and again, this might be why I'm conspiracy theorying my way through this. No, that's cool. The person may have been hiding their face.
Paul, we know with police, like they're working on some big cases that you and I are talking about at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can throw anything into the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely anything goes because it's a mystery.
Yeah.
It's speculation. And, you know, the fact that he was then, I mean, you can't, if you've met someone once in your life for maybe a minute, and then sometime later you are played a recording and you are told that's this person, do you remember that voice? And you say, yes, it would be different if the private investigator did. Five recordings of five different men.
Oh, like a lineup.
Yes.
Yeah,
That's so you've got auto suggestion. That's why the coroner was a bit, no, I don't think that's just not. But he was a very experienced private investigator. And this is a little bit of an interesting thing. You may recall I mentioned the half cigarette.
Yeah.
One of his friends, a good friend... of James,
uh-huh. Yeah,
said that was a particular trait. This is back in the days when cigarettes were not incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And he only ever smoked half a cigarette. And they find half a cigarette.
Okay.
There are things that... They found two lolly papers. They found the two empty bottles of water.
Uh-huh.
They found everything except... And they found the truck, except for James. The police felt... Because the whole scene had been tainted, that it was not worth bringing in the dogs,
right?
The you know, the sniffer dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was even word of bringing in cadaver dogs that can, you know, hunt out deceased people.
Mm-hmm.
The cotton farm authorized one of their fixed wing aircraft to be utilized.
Okay.
The police brought in mounted police. They had SES, they had volunteer firefighters, members of the public, lots and lots of people. And they started to do a search for James. They had grave fears. And they searched and they searched.
Right.
And they never ever found, or they didn't find James in that particular period of close to that the event of finding the truck.
Yeah, okay.
The police, I imagine, became fairly... See, this is another thing, listeners, that I found problematic going through the court papers. One thing I found troubling is that there was a... remember I told you about the guy and his girlfriend and they were driving and they saw all the tracks? Then yep. They come across the truck. Okay, in evidence, he said that there was only one set of tracks.
Right.
Now, again, I find that problematic. I don't understand... How you'd even be looking at that. I mean, why you come across the truck, why would you be looking down thinking, wow, there's just one set of tracks here? And that's not actually right also, because what happened earlier that morning, you may recall there were two cars we know that drove past and they stopped and had a word with a male person at the scene. So already we've got another two sets of tracks.
Uh-huh.
You've really got to sort of dig down in these cases. So the person that said, yes, there's one set of tracks, that's not right. The coroner is a wise person. You know, they're very good at sort of sifting through, because lots and lots of people want to come up with their own opinions, their own theories. Mm-hmm. Now, there were other theories that were postulated. One of them was that the man at the truck was actually not James, and there's a theory that James wasn't even driving the truck. Something had happened to him at a few towns prior, And this was, in fact, someone else that had hijacked the truck. But then you have to think about, were they interested in the contents? Did they know the manifest? Or, again, have you ever thought about how drugs, Paul, are moved around regional Australia? Trucks are great. They stop at a truck stop outside of town. Someone from the town drives out, meets, parcel is handed over, money changes hands.
Now, just to be clear, you're not saying this is what
happened. God, no. I'm just saying that, again, with our podcast, we do need to sort of, because the family are still trying to sort of figure out what on earth has happened to their son, and the misery and the sorrow and the agony, the frustration.
Yeah.
All of these things. Imagine all the family just meeting all the time, talking, what's happening, talking to the police. The police would become, for a while, all consumed with this matter. And as time went by, except for the family and close friends, this incident, this life-changing event for some people started to fade away. Of course, they held the case was held in Sydney at the coroner's court.
Yeah.
And then, Paul, perhaps you would like to tell us what happens approximately 8 years later.
Yeah, I'm going to read here from a piece which is extremely sad. Until last year, no trace of the 31-year-old had been found. Only a half-smoked cigarette, two bottles of water, an overnight bag were found in his abandoned interstate transporter truck. But in September last year, when the family had all but given up hope, his remains were discovered when a farm worker found a skull in a paddock at a station close to where his truck was found. The remains were crushed and spread out over a large area by cattle on the station and were badly damaged by sun exposure and flooding. And I'm so sorry to be so graphic. I'm just quoting the piece here. They were in such bad condition that a year-long process of DNA testing proved inconclusive. So, Dad, what did they do then?
So, look, I think this is important for everyone, including the family, to appreciate, and I'm sure they do, but to really appreciate that the police officers involved in this case, absolutely, they left no stone unturned.
Yeah.
The work they went to. For 12 months in Australia, they tried to identify the bones using DNA, and it was then decided, and of course, you have to appreciate that everything that happens in these cases involves money.
Yeah.
It's someone's paying for this. They then pay, I dare say, a fair whacking amount of money to have the bones sent to Mexico.
Right.
I mean, just being that's able
what,
to...
Yeah, that's what... So partway through this exploration, Dad was sending me this headline that the bones were sent to Mexico. I was so confused. Mm. So what did they find out there?
Okay, obviously. So what they then do, they have to get the DNA from members of the family, which probably involved the dear mother and father who are still alive and relatives. Through extensive DNA advanced research done at a laboratory in Mexico, they made a 100% determination that this was, in fact, James Douglas White.
So they find... Okay, so they got the remains. They got some closure in that they found...
Yes. And
then they got them DNA tested.
True. Okay. So that is a very, very positive result for the family. And it's a fairly rare result to wait so long to find, which means that the family can bury their son, their uncle, their friend. They have a ceremony in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
But at the scene where these bones were found, in the middle of a field, 2 kilometres from the truck, in the vicinity of the bones, but buried, they found James's keys to his flat.
Right.
And they didn't find the mobile, but it was surmised that possibly the body had moved because it is prone to flooding. And some of the other items may well have just washed away. Then Christine and I last night were talking about the... and I'm sorry to the family that are listening, but we need to sort of discuss the actual finding of the bones. You know, this is a cotton farm. I hate to say it, but, cattle. It's a cattle farm too.
We can probably imagine what...
But as the family said, at the time of the incident, the earth was parched. It just seems unbelievable. And I understand the family, how they feel so sort of upset and confused as to why they couldn't find the body of their son so close after carrying out such an extensive search, which then starts to make you wonder about, you know, was that James's resting place where he, you know, he just sort of collapsed? The whole thing sounds quite bizarre.
Do you think, and again, we're not investigators, but based on everything that you've read and everything that we've seen, do you think, I mean, what do you think happened here? Obviously, there are multiple theories. There are different ways to look at this. But do you think any... Okay, first of all, do you think there's any credence to the theory that the person spotted at the truck was somebody other than James?
That's a good question. If I had to apportion a percentage value to the person being James, I would apportion that at around about between 70 and 80% that it was him.
Okay.
But there is a gap, see? And I guess in crime, in true crime, and everything we talk about, 1%...
is worth investigating.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Because if it's not 100%, then there's doubt. If there's doubt, there's reason to dig deeper.
And they talk about beyond reasonable doubt all the time.
And, correct. And Paul, what I would love to do with you, and we have joked about this over the years. When I say joked, we have not been super serious.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you now, something about this case has really got under my skin. Maybe it's because I used to live on a sheep station.
When did you live on a sheep station?
From the age of 1 till 3.
What?
My dad taught on a sheep station in Willalar near Boggabrine, which is near Gunnedah, near Tamworth.
You've never mentioned this to me.
And I have such deep and ingrained memories of being a young kid and just having this vastness just as far as the eye could see. It's a powerful... The Australian countryside is... It's
primal. It's very weird.
It's just it's just amazing. And,
right. You
know, I've been... This story has really... I'm not going to say it's affected me, but, you know, it's an important story to tell, and it's a sad story. Whilst I don't like to give the family, you know, sort of any false hope, really. I mean, they are blessed that they've got their son and had a proper, you know, they can go and visit him at a cemetery, which is, you know, as the mother said, we're very lucky. A lot of families can't do this. One thing that did upset the mother was that the police basically said case closed, and they felt that was maybe, and rightfully so, they felt sad about that. They would like to think that maybe, you know, and I think the fact that we're talking about this today, Paul,
look, we're not trying to say we know what happened.
No.
We're just trying to explore the possibilities and also just discuss this story, because it is a look, people go missing every day, but this seems like an odd one. And also, how rare to have somebody who listens to the show reach out and go, hey, I think this is an interesting story with some strange elements, and, you know, we miss him. And
I agree.
Yeah.
Paul, I've enjoyed our time this morning talking about it.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's a mystery.
Yeah.
There are so many things in life that... particularly crime nature that we talk about, and, you know, we don't always know. And if there's no one to talk, in other words, the actual victim, you know. I mean, people do speak from the grave occasionally, through DNA. But at this stage, it's, you know, if I was to sort of cast my eye over the case and sort of look down from above and just imagine what happened that night, I'm flummoxed.
Yeah. And that's fine. I don't think anybody expects you to know what happened, but God, what an interesting story. I mean, very sad, but very strange, and definitely worth looking at. Look, I hope we did this story some justice, and I hope we didn't misstep at any point. I mean, I agree. I think it was worth looking at, and I really, really appreciate the listener reaching out and sort of, you know, asking us to have a look. So yeah, I think that's all the time we have for this case. Would you agree?
I agree.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening to what I hope was an enlightening, or at least interesting, episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Something very different for Dad and I, but we really did appreciate getting contacted and discussing this story. We're going to be back at the end of the week with a brand new episode of Loose Ends. But in the meantime, stay safe, and we'll see you soon for more Loose Units. Bye, everyone.
Cheerio.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.